The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and careers. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. We're always glad to have you. Today we're going to be talking about disaster preparation, and talking about a number of different things. As we go into the month of September and October and November, and we go into the other months, a lot of times we are going to experience a number of different things: hurricanes, floods, the snows start going to start coming. A number of different areas of the country will be affected, and so we want to kind of talk about that today. As we've seen the floods in Baton Rouge in Louisiana, it kind of puts us in the mindset that we need to be prepared. We need to make sure that we are ready for any kind of situation. A lot of times people are getting caught off guard. And so we kind of want to talk about that today. We're going to be talking to Julie Rochman. She is the president and CEO of the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. You can find their site at disastersafety.org. Very, very great site. Got a lot of great information. But Julie is here to really kind of dive into disaster preparation and how people can really kind of say, listen, you know what? What should I be doing in order to prepare for a number of different scenarios? Julie, welcome to Fed Access.
Thanks very much for having me on.
You know, Julie, talk to us, one, about your organization, because, I mean, I want people to kind of understand what you and your organization do at disastersafety.org. And then also talk to us about kind of, you know, what is the time, what's the season that we're starting to go upon in terms of kind of disasters that people should be thinking about? What situations around the country should people be thinking about?
Well, okay, so let's start with who we are. The Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety is a nonprofit organization that is supported entirely by the insurance industry. We represent about 90% of the companies that write homeowners insurance, what we call personal lines insurance, and about 65% of the companies that write commercial insurance and just property. So we don't really deal with autos or life or health, just property insurance. And we are obsessed with finding ways to reduce damage and destruction and loss of life and injuries that result from natural catastrophes like wind, water, fire, and hail, and earthquakes, winter weather, as well as some man-made hazards when plumbing fails, when there are electrical fires, et cetera. So the whole idea is that the insurance industry wants to protect our policyholders so that we don't have lives disrupted, communities being torn apart by things that we can do better with regard to resisting and becoming more resilient against. As far as the season, we're at an interesting point right now on the calendar because we're in the heart of hurricane season in the Atlantic, and there are some storms lined up even as we speak. We're also in the midst of what would traditionally be wildfire season in several parts of the country, although given the droughts we've had in the U.S., there really is now less of a wildfire season and a wildfire risk all year round. Just yesterday, there were surprising, at least non-seasonal tornadoes in Indiana. So we're seeing bad weather, not to even mention, and we should take a minute to mention, all the flooding in Louisiana and the terrible tragedy that's been unfolding down there in slow motion. So we've got a lot to deal with Mother Nature in this country right now.
You know, as we kind of think about that, and you've been looking at these weather incidents and other disasters and everything else for quite some time, do you feel that it's a unique time? I mean, you know, we talk about the fires out in the West and everything else. I mean, some of the firefighters have said, you know, they've never seen anything like this before. You hear it down in Louisiana. I've never seen anything like this before. This is kind of a once in a 100-year situation. We hear about certain earthquakes that people say, I've never seen anything like this before. Are we coming into, you know, a new kind of weather cycle where we need to start having a little bit more concern about, you know, how we fortify our home, how we prepare for disasters?
Well, we would argue here at IBHS that we should fortify our homes just because we know that earthquakes and fires and winter weather and hurricanes and tornadoes and hailstorms can happen. just period. We know that they happen. They're easily predictable events in certain parts of the country. There are those outlying events like the catastrophic floods, like that just voracious wildfire that we've seen, earthquakes in areas where we don't typically see earthquakes, including D.C. not that long ago when the Washington Monument and other buildings were damaged. So there's something going on. I think the challenge for scientists, and I would include structural engineers like the people we have here, as well as meteorologists, which we also have here, climatologists, all the people who are trying to figure out exactly what's going on, is that we know relatively little compared to the history of this planet. I mean, the snapshot that we get is hundreds of years' worth of data, which seems like a lot to us. And we can forensically go back and explore the Ice Age and other things through carbon dating, and we can learn a lot through history. But to definitively say a cycle of weather is 10 years or 50 years or 100 years or 1,000 years, I think is really difficult. And so from our perspective, whether you believe that there's climate change and it's getting more extreme, there's climate change and it's steady, there's climate change and it's too late to do anything about it, there is no climate change, wherever you stand on those types of framework and contextual issues, we believe that as a country, we need to do a better job of preparing our homes and businesses and communities to withstand whatever Mother Nature brings. Not suggesting, by the way, that everybody build a bunker.
Right, sure.
Because they won't, right? So the way we talk about it is narrowing the path of the storm. Right. Whether there is going to be catastrophic flooding or terrible wildfires or a very severe hurricane, whatever the natural disaster is, we should not accept as homeowners and property owners in commercial space the fact that our buildings are basically disposable. If you live on Bermuda, you know there are going to be hurricanes, mm-hmm. and you can't drive off of the island, so you build better.
Right.
Whether or not the hurricanes are getting more frequent or more intense is really beside the point. The point is you know they're going to come, and so you build to defend against them. In this country, we have a long, unfortunate history of building in ways that are not appropriate for the environment in which we are living and working. Something bad happens, the structures are destroyed, everybody says, I can't believe it happened here, this is so terrible, let's not let it happen again. And then they put the buildings back largely in the same places in the same way over and over again. And it's really time, at least we in the insurance industry believe it's time, and we have a lot of allies who are running alongside us, I'm happy to say. We believe it's time to do better and that there are things we can do to narrow the path of storms and really eliminate the type of everyday destruction or the destruction that an EF0 or EF1 tornado could cause, that a tropical storm or a Cat 1 hurricane could cause, to prevent wildfire damage, to prevent flood damage. There are things that we know how to do. We just have to have the financial and political will to do them.
You know, you just kind of rise into another point that I was just about to make about the political will. What happens? I mean, you in the insurance industry, you guys are doing the research on it. You're monitoring things. You're looking at case scenarios and kind of saying we shouldn't repeat this. But what happens is the politics and maybe certain kind of maybe government agencies or whatever case, do they get in the way of change to say we need to rebuild this and maybe, make sure that homes are elevated a little bit higher, make sure they're fortified a little bit more, or whatever the case is. I mean, what is the pieces that are getting in the way of change?
Oh, that's a really good question.
that's that million-dollar question, right?
Yeah, so I would like to note that there are a lot of things that federal and state agencies are doing that are helpful, but let's hold that to the side for a second. I don't want any of your listeners to think this is just a slam on government, because it's not. There really are some very good things happening. But in terms of what gets in the way, I think the biggest thing that gets in the way is that the political mechanism in this country is really designed to give credit for things that are done, not for things that are prevented.
Mm.
So the old example that people use is if you fill a pothole, people will stand up and applaud and clap you on the back and say, thank you, councilman, senator, whoever you are, for filling the pothole that was terrible. If you prevented the pothole from happening, so nobody ever saw it, and it was never a problem, you don't get nearly as much credit.
Right.
So we are very much a curative mentality rather than a preventative mentality. And then the other thing that actually two other things real quick. One is that we have this sense of disaster amnesia that sets in, and the farther in time and space you are from an event, whether the event happened in your area, now time has moved on, or the event happened near you or far from you, and therefore you can say, oh, it wasn't me. As we move through both of those dimensions, we typically forget how horrible the thing was that was experienced, and we just say, oh, that can't happen to me. We have an incredible capacity in this country, and the government is no exception, because this is what their constituents want, is to address what's right in front of you and not to really, you know, think longer term and reach back and say, oh, that was bad, we shouldn't let that happen again.
Right.
And then the third thing I would say is we really, in terms of public policy in this country, are not honest with people about the risk that we face.
Hmm.
So we are more than happy to subsidize people who want to live in areas that are obviously going to experience repetitive flooding, in areas that are obviously prone to loss from hurricanes or from wildfires. And private property rights in this country are very sacred, and there's a lot of impact on economies of property taxes, like here in Florida. It's a very property tax-driven economy. And so there are a lot of incentives to just keep building, whether it's in the wildland urban interface, which is vulnerable, along our vulnerable coasts, on fault lines. Just keep building. And then just don't talk about the fact that there's a risk. Hmm. And that really doesn't do anybody any good.
Right. We got to take a quick break. I want to keep on talking about this because you brought up a number of good points. But then I also want to go into National Preparedness Month that's going on in September, and then a number of different kind of programs you've got on the Fortify Home Program and the other things you guys are doing. There's some great stuff that's going on. We're talking to Julie Rochman. She is the president and the chief executive officer of the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. The website is a great website. You can find it at disastersafety.org. We're talking about disaster preparedness, talking about how to make sure that you are good to go no matter what the situation, flood, hurricane, anything that comes about, you know, how to make sure that your home, your business is safe during these time periods, because it's not a matter of if it's going to come. It's more of a matter of when, and you want to make sure you are good to go when those things do happen. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we have been talking about disaster. We have been talking about disaster preparedness. We've been talking about how to make sure that your home or business is prepared for a scenario. And we've been talking about it from a number of different perspectives, not just only insurance, but also the dynamic of really kind of, you know, thinking about things ahead of time and kind of making sure that you are being resilient. We are talking to the president and chief executive officer of the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety, Julie Rochman. She's on the line with us today, and we've been having a real good conversation. Julie, you know, you kind of mentioned a couple of different things. I thought all those were very, very powerful points about, you know, kind of economies and politics and a number of different scenarios that we have to deal with. Are you seeing, you know, a change? I mean, what, before I kind of go into the programs, are you seeing change, or do you see that there needs to be more education, whether it be schools, there needs to be a more of a public service announcements? I mean, you know, we have the ready.gov, we've got your site, we've got a couple other things, but how do we start getting into the psyche of people a little bit more to really make some changes to say, hey, listen, maybe you don't need to live on the coastline. Maybe we've got to kind of change our mindsets about where you're staying, how you build, and everything else. What needs to be done for that?
Well, that's a good question. That's a big question. You know, I think that first and foremost, people have to understand that risk is a part of life, and you have to look it in the eye, and you can't just talk past it and think it's never going to happen to me. And Americans have just an amazing capacity to work statistics in their favor, so we'll all go out when the Powerball jackpot is, you know, $200 million or $400 million, and buy the tickets, and we're already dreaming about how we're going to spend it. We're going to pay off our mortgage and send everybody to college and start a foundation and all those wonderful things, because we know, even though the odds are much greater that we'll be hit by lightning, that we're going to win that lottery jackpot, and somebody does, right? And then we're all, see, somebody had to win.
Reverse
of that are the negative statistics. And so we talk about, in the disaster resilience community, we talk about 1 in 100 events. You'll hear with the flooding, for example, and the wildfires, people will use terms like 1 in 500 or 1 in 1,000 year events, and those are statistical. Maybe it's not the best way to talk about it, because people tend to think, oh, it's 1 in 100 year event, it just happened, so now I've got 99 more years, and that's actually not what it means.
Mm-hmm.
But we can take those statistics, and we can look at the the possibilities of another 1938 hurricane, the Long Island Express moving up the Long Island Sound, or another Hurricane Katrina, or Hurricane Ike, or Andrew, and we'll say, it won't happen here. It can't happen to me. And then what you see on the news every time a major event happens is the same thing. It is a tragic, just like a tragic parade of victims saying, I never thought it could happen here. We didn't think it would happen to us. We can't believe this happened here. It shouldn't have happened to us. And it's like, all right, statistically speaking, there was a much better chance of the bad thing happening to you than winning the lottery.
Right.
But just as human beings and as Americans, we are endlessly optimistic. So I don't mean to be down on optimism. I just think you got to hope for the best. And you have to prepare for something bad happening at the same time. Why not just take the steps so that your home, your family, your property, your business have some self-defense mechanisms built in? So if you do have to evacuate suddenly due to a storm or a fire or whatever, there's a better chance of what you have left behind being there when you can return.
Right, right. You know, there's a program that you guys have called the Fortified Home Program. Looking at it about build strong and build fortified. You know, when we look at that and you kind of think about kind of homes and maybe new construction or maybe previous construction, what are you talking about in terms of kind of fortifying a home, like you just said, to make sure that when you come back home, you know, you still have something to come back home to? What is that program?
So our program is called Fortified. It is, we have actually two different standards for residential construction and one for commercial construction. The idea is that building codes are terrific, and a strong, well-enforced building code is very valuable, but building codes really only apply to new construction,
mm-hmm.
and we have a lot of existing buildings out there.
I mean,
the built environment,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a whole lot. I mean, when we drive up and down the coast here in Florida, there's like $11 trillion of buildings exposed to loss from Texas to Maine. The wildland urban interface is, you know, growing very quickly where people are vulnerable to wildfire. In the middle of the country where there are a lot of states that don't actually have statewide building codes or their enforcement is somewhat lax, there's a huge exposure to thunderstorms and tornadoes. So we've created the Fortified program that can be applied to new homes, but more importantly, it can be applied to existing homes. So you can retrofit those homes to bring them up to basically the equivalent of the latest code, and in the middle of the country, even beyond the code, to protect against high wind and wind-driven water. Those are the main hazards that we focus on, because the building codes look at electrical, plumbing, and mechanical systems. There are requirements for elevation in flood-prone areas,
mm-hmm.
but they really don't, particularly away from the coast, deal with wind the way that we do in our Fortified program.
Gotcha. You know, with all of that, and I see you've got a number of different things out of Fortified app and all the other kind of pieces, when we're kind of looking at that kind of stuff, right, and we're kind of saying, hey, listen, how do I get, you know, a home that's fortified? Are all the new developers and new construction people, are they all on the same page, or do you have to find a specific person who says, you know, we build fortified homes, or do you have to request it and say, I want my home built to this code? I mean, you know, how is that? It doesn't seem like it's standardized right now. It seems like you have to go out and find that. What's the process?
Well, that's true. And the Fortified program is relatively new. I should mention there's only about 3,500 fortified homes in the country, but it is growing. And we're really happy that there are several states and federal agencies that are helping us identify incentives to offset some of the costs for homeowners to actually undertake the Fortified program. But the best way to get involved is to go on our website, which is disastersafety.org. There's a Fortified link. And the process is basically that if a home builder wants to get fortified, they find what we call an evaluator, which is someone who has been certified and trained, has a license on the line, is very knowledgeable. And they come out to your home and they'll say, all right, Derek, here's what your home is like now, and here's what it would take to get your home to the fortified bronze level, which is largely about strengthening the roof system and minimizing the risk of water getting into the home,
mm-hmm.
and making sure the roof stays on and is attached to the walls if the winds blow. We see a lot of houses that their roofs are blown off, and we're trying to prevent that. If you want to go to silver, which is the next highest level, you do all the bronze stuff, and then you actually strengthen the windows and doors, and that helps keep wind from entering the house if the windows are broken by debris or if the garage door fails. And then if you want to go all the way to gold, I'm sorry, you do the bronze and silver stuff, and then you strengthen the structural system of the house, basically creating like a safety cage like you have in your car with a continuous load path that ties the roof to the walls to the floors to the foundation. And that's the best way to really minimize structural risk from high winds. For a new home, we do have several builders, including one of the largest builders in the country, who are building fortified homes. They're doing that mostly in states like Alabama, Mississippi, North Carolina, where there are incentives in place to do so. It is much easier and less expensive to do some of the things that can get you to the gold standard with the structural strengthening of the home when the walls are open, when you can strap things together.
Sure.
So what we find is that new home builders typically want to go all the way to gold, and the cost difference is not much. And then for retrofitting, we find that the vast majority of people who have an existing home really just deal with the roof, which will be a huge improvement. It's the least expensive, easiest to do, and that would get you a bronze designation.
You know, as you look at that, a lot of people will say, this, you know, that sounds great. You know, you've got the bronze, silver, gold, different levels, and a lot of people even with existing homes will kind of say, you know, I would be interested. Are there tax credits? Are there certain things that, you know, will it lower your insurance? You know, are there certain financial, of course, I mean, you don't suffer the loss, but a lot of people are going to be thinking, if I do this, like with any insurance, right, it would never happen to me, right? So I spent all this money and everything else. So for people out there who are considering it, are there tax credits or any kind of other incentives that will reduce, you know, financial liability or anything like that for them?
Well, there are insurance incentives in several states. Unfortunately, the insurance industry cannot get together and decide to do something like that. There are laws that prevent insurers from having conversations about market activities, antitrust laws. So each individual company has to decide what they're going to do.
Okay.
But in some states like Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, North Carolina, there are mandatory incentives related to insurance. So if you get a fortified designation and you can submit that to your insurer, they will give you a credit against the wind portion of your premium. It's not going to be off of the theft and burglary and liability, et cetera, but there will be a fairly significant discount. And we're also seeing in places like Alabama, who've really embraced fortified more than any other state and really are leading the nation in how to do this, they offer building permit rebates, they have tax incentives. The state of Rhode Island is considering accelerating building permits if you're pulling for fortified. So if you're applying for a permit in Rhode Island right now, it can take maybe 9 weeks to get the permit, which is a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about if you're going to obtain a permit for fortified work, that they promise you'll get your permit in less than 2 weeks. So we're working with a number of states as well as several federal agencies to create incentives that will both be first dollar savings for consumers who want to go fortified, and also longer-term cost of ownership incentives. In fact, we just had a study from the University of Alabama that found that homes that were designated as fortified, they were appraised at about 7% higher value than similar homes when you held all the other variables constant. And they actually think that's low. They actually think as more fortified houses come online, that the difference in value when you go to sell, obviously you're going to get more money, is going to be higher than 7%. So we were really, really encouraged by that data.
Well, you know, definitely in places like Alabama where you do, and I used to live in Alabama where the tornadoes were notorious, and you know, high winds and other things like that just ravage certain areas, depending in Alabama, Georgia, and up and down the South. So, I mean, though, I would imagine that that would definitely increase your market value on your home automatically, you know, in looking at certain things. We're talking about disaster safety. We're talking about what's going on in terms of how you should prepare either your home, your business, your life to prepare for disasters. You know, at some point in time, you will have a situation, whether it be a hurricane, a flood, a snowstorm, or something that may impact your life. And we're talking about being ready for it, making sure that you can be resilient, making sure that you can pop back up and get things going again, making sure that the damage that's caused is minimal and that you have a home to come back to and that you can just kind of restart life pretty easy. We're talking to Julie Rochman. She is, and Julie, I want you to give the site that and let people know about. I've given it a couple of times. What's the site that people should know about?
Our website is disastersafety.org, and there's a lot of resources up there. It's all free. It's all meant for the public to help defend themselves against whatever Mother Nature throws at them.
We're talking to Judy. We're going to keep on talking to Judy when we come back. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about disaster. We've been talking about kind of disaster safety, and it's a great site called disastersafety.org that we have been talking about, and it's from the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. We've been talking to the president of this organization, Julie Rochman. She is the president and CEO of this organization. They've been doing a lot of great work, you know, really working with the insurance companies, working with federal, state, local agencies, working with people and really educating people about disaster, about the number of different disasters, how to prepare yourself, how to be safe in those disasters, and basically how to be resilient, how to be able to pop back up after the disaster comes, and making sure that there's minimal damage, maybe hopefully no damage, but making sure you can get life back going again. We've been going through this conversation and we've discussed how to fortify your home. We've discussed a couple of different areas, but I want to swing over to business because, you know, as we think about certain things and everybody's working, whether it be a government agency or a private sector or an NGO or nonprofit or whatever you're doing, we need to make sure that we're prepared to do those kind of things. You know, Julie, when you think about business and people working, what is your advice? I mean, what is your industry and what is your organization advising people to kind of think about in terms of making sure that your business is protected or your organization is protected, and then how to also make sure your employees and the work you do is protected?
That's a really great topic. So we know that in a community, whether it's Washington, D.C., or, you know, where we were talking about Alabama a few minutes ago, wherever, that if the homes are fortified and the businesses and the critical infrastructure are not defended well, then the community will die because there's no jobs, there's no tax base, there's nothing for people to do if all that's left is their homes. And the reverse is also true. If the businesses and the critical infrastructure are all there, but the homes are gone, then people are not thinking about coming to work. They're concerned with putting their lives back together and getting their homes back up and running. So it is important
Let me interject on this. I think about Louisiana. Like, I mean, this the time that's going to get the schools back up and get the businesses back up, I mean, that's going to be a pretty long time. I mean, people are going to be impacted not only for weeks, but you're talking about months.
Oh, years in some cases. Yeah. New Orleans still hasn't recovered fully from Hurricane Katrina. And if you talk to people in Miami, it took them, you know, 10 years to get back after Hurricane Andrew in some places. Cedar Rapids flooding a few years ago was terrible. Tuscaloosa, Joplin. I mean, but the sad thing is there's a whole list of events by name or places by name that we could run through where people define their lives and their community as before or after that event. And so what we're trying to do, and I'm glad that you raised business, because businesses play a huge role in making sure that a community is prepared. You know, we want people, the worst is going to happen somewhere, but we want people not to have to watch their community fall off a cliff. We want it to be a bump in the road, you know, that they are more resilient. They can come back the same or better than they were before and take lessons from, you know, bad events when they hit. And part of that, from a business perspective, again, is talking to your people about the risks they face, but knowing the risks to your business. And sometimes the risk isn't even anything huge. I mean, somebody once said very wisely that a disaster is something that happens to you, right? If it floods someplace else, I may not consider it a disaster. If it floods my basement because my washing machine or toilet overflowed and it ruined a whole bunch of stuff in my basement, that's a disaster for me personally. And it's kind of the same with businesses. You can have a power outage that isn't widespread, or maybe it is, but a power outage for a lot of businesses shuts them down. And we know that about one in four businesses that shut down for more than 24 hours from a natural disaster don't reopen their doors. So you want to prepare for the things that you can prepare for, things like power outage, loss of utilities. There's a tree down and you can't get to your premises, or there's something else happening near you and you're prevented from getting to your workplace. Then there are things like, you know, pandemic and flu, interior fire. Then on top of all that are the natural disasters. I don't want to overwhelm people, but one of the things that businesses need to do is take a hard look at how they are prepared if something large or small displaces them or shuts them down. And what are they going to do? What's their backup plan? And we have a toolkit called Open for Business EZ, which is pretty easy. And I know because we've actually put a plan in place here. We try to practice what we preach.
Okay.
And it's a great toolkit, and it's free. And then the Small Business Administration and the Chambers of Commerce and others have both used our program and created their own. So there's a lot of free information out there. It is not difficult for business to figure this out.
You know, as I'm looking at the you've got a great you know, resource on your page, and I definitely want people to go to disastersafety.org and go to the area that is focused in on resources, because you can really kind of break some things out. But the first one is business protection, and you kind of talk about a couple of different things. You know, one, you know, making sure you've got commercial generators as, you know, for backup power. And as I think about it, and I think about intellectual property, and I think about data and everything else, are a lot of, and this is not only for big businesses, but this is, you know, also for small businesses. You know, some people are moving things to the cloud or whatever. But if you don't have that backup generator, you could lose, you know, whether it be food or you can lose intellectual property. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you move everything to the cloud, that's great, if as long as you can get to the cloud.
Right,
so, if you don't have connectivity, it doesn't do much good.
If you don't have power, you can't get to the cloud, can you?
Right, exactly. And you may recall after, you know, I was in Washington, D.C. on 9/11, and mm-hmm. the cell towers were all crammed. I mean, you couldn't get a call out. So a lot of the things that people are relying upon in good times and fair weather may not be available to you just because everything's going to be so crowded. And, you know, if power's out, you've got a real issue. But I would add one other thing, Derek, and that is when people do a plan, and it's great to do a plan, unless you keep the plan updated and mm-hmm. test the plan, mm-hmm. you will not know until you absolutely need it if it's going to work.
Right.
So we always encourage people, have a plan, practice the plan, test the plan, exercise the plan, update the plan, and don't make it so complicated that it's not going to work for you.
Right. You know, you had an interesting thing, and this has kind of been coming, you know, part of, I know the federal government tried to move into this about kind of telework, telecommuting. You know, it seems as if you guys are really advocates of that in terms of kind of saying, listen, make sure that you are not so reliant about people coming into work, but you have telecommuting as part of the plan. I mean, talk about that.
Well, if your workplace is inaccessible, or your workplace is damaged,
mm-hmm.
and you still have critical functions, whether it's paying your people or servicing clients that you must do, then it is going to be easier for you to do that if you have people in a separate location, either
right.
all together in one separate location, or given the ability to work remotely. You know, bad weather, just a few inches of snow in Washington can shut the place down.
Very easy.
And I think the federal government has gotten smarter, and private business has gotten smarter about saying, okay, if I tell my employees, take your laptops home, and, you know, you have a work phone, and we'd like you to continue to be able to do what you can, you know, most people will. They will try to keep working mm-hmm. as long as, again, their homes or wherever it is they would be telecommuting from also have power and the ability to, you know, withstand whatever it was that happened.
Right. You know, Julia, it seems to me that part of this plan, right, should be that it's not only the kind of, you know, the business protection, but I think the businesses should be educating their employees that you need to make sure your homes and everything else are also good to go. I mean, is that part of, you know, that it seems that it should be a kind of a dual conversation that, you know, we want you to be safe at home. We want our business to be safe. And if both are working together, then we make sure that we have a strong workforce.
Yes, absolutely. You want your key employees and all of your employees, if you know, businesses should care about the people who work for them and with them, and wanting to make sure that they're safe and protected is really essential. So we always encourage even our own insurance company members to make sure that they're not just sharing our resources with their policyholders, but they're sharing our resources with their colleagues
right.
and their employees.
Right.
The other thing I would add is if you are a big business and you think, oh, we don't have to worry, we've got all plants all over the place, whatever, key suppliers, you know, part of your supply chain that might be, you might be more dependent upon them than you realize, those are often small businesses who make something, some particular type of widget or something that you just can't really live without. Make sure that they have a business continuity plan. And I think we saw the evidence of that when the earthquake and tsunami hit Japan a few years ago. There were a lot of critical supply chains that were cut in this country because of what happened over there.
That is a very, very good point, because we're not only seeing the disasters, and we see Italy. I mean, there's a number of different things that are happening all over the world constantly, that whether it be an earthquake, a tsunami, or a nuclear disaster or something like that. So if you are dependent upon a supply chain and getting, you know, either widgets or getting clothes or whatever your goods are that you're selling or providing, and then something happens, you could be out of business very, very quickly. That's a great point. We're talking to Julie Rochman. She is the president and CEO of the Insurance Institute for business and home safety. You can find their website at disastersafety.org. It's a great website. I encourage everybody to go to it. A lot of great resources on it. We're talking about disaster preparedness and disaster safety and just making sure that you can be resilient and make sure that you can survive a disaster, pop back from a disaster, and then also prosper after disaster. We don't want you just to be in survival mode. We want you to kind of pop back and then make sure you're good to go and then prospering after a disaster. We're going to keep on this conversation in the last segment. We're going to keep on talking about business and a couple of the programs as we end up the show. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been having a real good conversation about disaster, about preparation for disaster, about safety for disaster, about really, really making sure that you fortify homes, fortify businesses, making sure that you're planning things out, having a continuity plan, having a number of different things already set up so that if something comes, we know that disasters will come. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. But when they do come, that we are prepared and we are able to survive these things the right way and then be resilient, pop back, and everything else. We've been talking to Julie Rochman. She is the president and CEO of the Insurance Institute for Home for Business and Home Safety. Did I get that right? Because I pulled away. Julie, did I get that right?
Yep.
All right, I got it right.
Business and home safety.
Right. And I pulled away from my screen real quick, and I wanted to make sure my mind is working good. But the website is disastersafety.org, disastersafety.org. I want everybody to go to it. It's a really, really good site. But they do a number of good things, and they have a number of good resources for businesses, for homes, for individuals, for entrepreneurs, for business owners, and everything else that you should be using. Julie, I want to kind of keep on the conversation with business a little bit. And you talked about the app, about the open app that you have for, you know, continuity plans and everything else. Let me ask a quick question. Have we seen a situation where someone has done these things and it's been a success story where someone said, hey, listen, I followed the program. I put a plan in place. I fortified these things. Are there success stories that you guys see that has worked out around the country or the world?
We have, and I will tell you, we don't have as many as we would like to demonstrate that it's a widespread phenomenon, mm-hmm. because what happens is typically after an event, someone will say, oh, that was terrible. I should put a plan in place so it doesn't happen again.
Right.
And then fortunately, they're not hit again. So they're going to benefit whether they know it or not. We have seen some instances where there's been repeated losses of flooding, types of events that happened more than once, tornadoes, like in Moore, Oklahoma, where people have taken steps and they did actually recover more quickly. They suffered less damage mm-hmm. than the people around them. And typically, when that happens, the local news media will spotlight those people. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking of a Hurricane Charlie story. That when Charlie came ashore here in Punta Gorda, Florida, there was a dental office and I think it was a florist on the opposite corner of the street, and one of them had a continuity plan and structurally was better prepared than the other, and the one business that was not prepared was just flattened. It was just like a pile of
wow.
sticks.
Right.
And the other business was open within 24 hours. So we do know that these things work. I think it's important to remind people that there are degrees of preparedness. You don't have to go all the way to castle and moat. You know, just having a plan and knowing what you're going to do and thinking about what could happen before it actually does goes a long way toward helping you when something terrible does occur, that you just sort of kick into automatic and you know, because you've thought about these things and you've planned for them and you do what you need to do. It's also a really good way to focus and occupy your mind and look forward and know that you'll be okay. So emotionally, I think, you know, being prepared and having a plan is a wonderful thing. It is. There's nothing worse, and you can see it when you watch the news out of Louisiana and other places where there are catastrophes unfolding right before us, that there are just people who look dazed and lost, and they will stand and say to a reporter, everything I have is gone.
Right.
And that could happen in a moment.
And that's right.
And it's so tragic to see it again and again. So we do know that there are people who learn from disaster, fortunately. they do make preparations for the next time, and then when an event happens, there are always those proof points. Somebody, a family emerging from a storm shelter, for example, when their neighbors may have been injured or killed because they didn't have a storm shelter, I think are some of the most stark examples that we see.
You know, Judy, do you feel that you know, we talk about insurance a lot, and we're hearing it right now as we deal with the Louisiana situation about, you know, hey, I was told not to get flood insurance. I was told that I wasn't in the realm of possibility that my house would, you know, be impacted this way. Do you feel that people are not insured enough? I mean, do you feel like sometimes people are kind of selling themselves short by not really getting the proper coverage? And also, too, are sometimes, you know, people underestimating, you know, say, listen, I live, you know, so many miles away from a river or a flood area, whatever the case is. You know, I think about Ellicott City. I think about a number of different areas that have just been damaged, you know, ravaged or certain areas. Are sometimes we underestimating, and somebody says, well, you know, you're good, but, you know, maybe you should kind of think about it yourself and say, well, I don't know, maybe this could happen and everything else. Should we be getting more insurance?
Well, you know, the challenge is that the flood insurance program has limitations, and there's a 30-day waiting period, and there are certain communities that participate with the flood insurance program and others that don't. The coverage has some limitations on it. Having said all of that, having some coverage is better than no coverage, and it can flood anywhere.
Right.
It can flood not just along the coast or along a river or lake. It can flood on the top of a mountain. You may recall Colorado Springs and Lyons, Colorado, was devastated by flooding several years ago. The community was literally cut off from people lower down on the mountain because the roads were washed out.
Right.
If the ground gets soaked enough in a desert, there can be flash floods. We see that in Arizona and elsewhere. So people, I think, are not... Again, they're sort of living in denial more often than they should about flood hazards, but exploring flood coverage, taking steps to minimize flood damage well beyond whether or not you insure, and then not doing things that risk your life. You know, don't drive into
right.
a flooded area.
Right, sure.
You know, again, we see people being rescued from their cars because they thought, oh, it was only a foot or two of water.
I can drive through the, it's constant. I mean, you always see that crazy story. Like, why would you drive into that? And I thought my car could make it. Well, no, don't even put your car in the water.
I mean, there are some simple things that kids learn, right? They learn stop, drop, and roll.
Right.
If there's a fire, and turn around, don't drown.
Right.
I mean, those are very simple. I think the government, federal government, has done a wonderful job of messaging, and a lot of private sector people have helped. But turn around, don't drown, that is just a simple command, and people need to heed it more often than they do.
Right. You know, as I think about this and kind of, you know, going, you know, forward, as we think about kind of disaster preparedness and recovery and resiliency, you know, as things starting to happen, are we starting to see that, you know, that some communities, and I know there have been a couple institutes have been talking about resilience. I think Rockefeller and a couple other different places have been talking about it beyond you guys as well. Are we starting to kind of see whole communities start to come together and say, we want to build resilient programs. We want to build a whole community that can withstand? Is that the where things are going to be headed in the future, or no?
I think so. I think so. You know, Moore, Oklahoma, which was ravaged by an EF5 tornado, stood up afterwards and said, this is not going to happen here again. And they enacted some parts of our fortified program into their building code so that they're adding structural strength to all the homes out there. They're looking to create, you know, community storm shelters. So I do think Alabama is another example I've cited several times since we've been talking after Hurricane Katrina, you know, as a community standing up and saying, not going to happen to us again. We're going to protect the coast. Other communities around the country are doing that. And my hope is that also the environmental groups, you mentioned the Rockefeller Foundation, there are a lot of family foundations that led the environmental movement, you know, to go green and be more sustainable as a country. We often talk about the fact that nothing is sustainable unless it's durable. And there is an intersection between going green and building strong. If your house ends up in a landfill, it's not very green. If it burns up, your carbon footprint has just been magnified. And all of the natural resources that have to be harvested after an event to rebuild and revitalize a community, it wouldn't have to be utilized if that community had stood strong in the first place. So I do think that there is a movement, and there are many parts of the federal government that are leading that movement. NOAA, the CEQ, FEMA, there's some really great stuff happening, and I do think that those communities that are trying to step up are going to find a lot of welcome and a lot of support at the local, state, and federal level. You know, certainly from the insurance industry.
Without question. You just mentioned something, and I always remember when I see the homes kind of, you know, dropping off, and because, you know, the ground has eroded and everything else. This kind of leads me into, like you just mentioned, about people building on the coast and everything else. I mean, I know that, property taxes is really, really important, but you know, I think that lives are more important. Are we also starting to kind of see the pushback a little bit to say, listen, you can't build on that mountain, or you can't build right up here, right this, that, and the other. We can't put a resort here. I mean, is there a little bit of pushback on certain things, or that's still a high mountain to climb?
That's still a high mountain to climb.
Okay.
The home builders and the developers in this country are very powerful interests, and land use conversations occur overwhelmingly at the local level. The NFIP, the National Flood Insurance Program, does have the ability to buy out repetitive loss properties, and there is some of that happening. And the Nature Conservancy and other environmental groups are trying to buy land and protect those lands and keep them, you know, so that they're not developed. Mm-hmm. But we have, in this country, we continue to take agricultural levy protected areas, so low levees that were meant to protect crops and fields that could be washed out, and we're building whole communities in those areas and not adding significant flood protection. We're developing the wildland urban interface at a fast pace. Only about 16% of the wildland urban interface is developed now, but we're putting a lot of homes in harm's way when it comes to wildland fire. And of course, the coasts most vulnerable to hurricane, the Atlantic and Gulf Coast, are heavily developed and getting even more so.
Wow. We've been talking to Julie Rochman. And Julie, I mean, I'm going to have to have you back because, I mean, there's so much we didn't cover and resources we didn't cover. But maybe later on this season as we get into the unfortunate disaster season. And I do want people to recognize also September is the preparation month, I believe, from FEMA and other organizations. You can go to ready.gov and look at September, just as ready.gov/September. And that's a National Preparedness Month. A lot of resources on there as well that people need to know about. DisasterSafety.org is the website for the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. And Julie Rochman, she's the president and CEO and just been a wealth of information. And we just thank you for doing that. But please go check out these sites. Get yourself prepared. Put a disaster plan together. Fortify your homes. Fortify your businesses. Make sure your employees are taken care of. Make sure your family is taken care of. We want to make sure that we spread that message to all people. Thank you, Julie, for being on the show.
Thanks, Derek. Really appreciate you having me on.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.